From SBR News, this is Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. The November ballot in Washington this year is filled with races for local offices, such as city council, school boards, and special district boards. The city of Spokane's ballot also includes races for three municipal court seats. Judicial races often don't get much attention, and many voters feel unprepared when it comes to casting votes in those races. So the Spokane chapter of the NAACP sponsored a forum to introduce voters to the four municipal court candidates running in two contested races. A fifth candidate, Kristen O'Sullivan, is unopposed and didn't attend. We'll hear excerpts from the forum next on Inland Journal. We'll hear this hour from the candidates running for the Spokane City Municipal Court positions 2 and 3. The incumbent for position 2 is Mary Logan. The challenger is Lyndon Smithson. The incumbent for position 3 is Gloria Ochoa Brook. The challenger is Sarah Friedman. I moderated the forum. Three women chosen by the NAACP each asked questions. We started with opening statements.
If we're going in alphabetical order, I guess we will start with Ms. Friedman.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sarah Friedman, and I am running for position 3 of municipal court. I originally am from New York City, and I hope no one will hold that against me. I went to law school in Seattle. I went to Seattle University School of Law. I did not go to Gonzaga again. I know that's a bit of a strike out here. But I do very much think that Gonzaga is a beautiful campus, and I've enjoyed getting to know quite a few members of staff there, and quite a few friends of mine have started working there at the law school as adjunct professors in the 8.5, almost 9 years that I've lived here in town. I started my career as a prosecutor, and then I became a defense attorney. I do conflict defense work as well as private practice, conflict being conflict public defense. I've tried everything from misdemeanors to Class A felonies, and I would be honored to have your vote because I believe in bringing empathy and justice back to Courtroom B. Thanks so much, and I'm very excited to be participating here today.
Thank you very much. Mary Logan, 2 minutes.
Thank you. I am Mary Logan, and I am seeking re-election to position number 2, a position that I have sat in for the last 16 years, where I have upheld the law with no bias, no prejudice, and in an earnest effort to create just results. By weighing the concerns of the parties that are before me. I most recently went through an evaluation, all the judicial candidates that are before you did, by the Spokane County Bar Association, and I was the only judicial candidate that was rated as exceptionally well qualified to be in this role. I hope to be able to continue to support a justice system that creates room for everyone, that has access to justice as its emphasis, as it moves forward, and that does not stomach special interest groups that try to convince us that Spokane is dying and that the only salve for that wound is incarceration. Spokane does have problems that need to be addressed. And I think that what's very important is for us to continue to enhance programs that get people out of the system and not punish them along the way so that they don't have an opportunity to address those issues. It's very tricky to vote for judges, and I would ask you to consider the following questions when you're making those determinations. Ask yourself, who has the experience to do this job? Who has the knowledge to do it well? Who has the trust of the people that they will be working with? I have over 100 judicial endorsements that say to you that I should retain this position. Thank you.
Next is Gloria Ochoa Brook.
Good
Good evening. I'm Gloria Chubrook. I'm seeking re-election to position 3 in municipal court. I am proud to be the first person of color to serve on the municipal court bench. I bring a perspective that isn't represented very often in our court system. I am the daughter of farm worker, former undocumented immigrants. English is my second language. I'm a first-generation high school graduate. I come in with an understanding of generational trauma and generational incarceration. And one of the things that I strongly believe in is that it's important to take a balanced approach to criminal justice. It's important to give people the opportunities for rehabilitation through restorative justice practices, connected to services, but it's also equally important to hold people compassionately accountable because the foundation of recovery is accountability. Also, it's important not to forget that there are people that are harmed when crimes are committed. And so it's this importance of having that perspective of always looking at it from, yes, we need to restore and rehabilitate, but we also need to be cognizant of the community. I am asking for your vote in November, and I'm looking forward to this forum.
And our fourth candidate is Lyndon Smithson.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Linda. I am running for Spokane Municipal Court District, Spokane Municipal Court Position 2. Thank you to the NAACP for having us tonight. This is a great forum, and I appreciate being here. A little bit about myself. I've been in Spokane since 1995. I graduated law school in 1998, worked at a criminal defense firm. After that, I worked in a civil litigation firm handling employment law cases for people who were oppressed or fired for on-the-job issues that were out of their control. After that, I worked for the prosecutor's office for approximately 19 years. I worked in our domestic violence unit. I was the head of our domestic violence unit. I actually created the domestic violence unit under Mayor Condon in 2011. I was also our chief assistant, city prosecutor, and at one point I was asked by the mayor to become city attorney. As city attorney, I oversaw 23 lawyers, 10 support staff is one of the largest law firms in Spokane, is the way we looked at it, and here I am today running for judge. The reason I'm running is to bring back, bring back the public's confidence in community court. We have a community court in downtown, and the downtown core is suffering. The businesses in the downtown core are impacted by this. I want to bring compassion and accountability. I want to get people out of the cycle of addiction and out of homelessness and improve the public safety in the process. So that's the reason that I'm running.
These are the candidates for 2 judicial seats in the city of Spokane. And now we go to the start of questions.
Closest to me is April Eberhardt, who is the chair of the Education Committee for the NAACP and the editor of Black Lens. In the middle is Gabriela Jablonski, who is from the board of Nuestras Raices. And farthest away from me, Nikita Habimana, who is the chair of the Launch Northwest Youth Council and from the NAACP Youth Council.
Hi, my first question is, what steps would you take to address any implicit biases that may affect judicial decisions?
I think we were going to go with Judge Logan first, okay. And then we'll, the next question, we'll start with Lyndon, and we'll just kind of work our way down.
Okay. Can you repeat the question, please?
Yes. What steps would you take to address any implicit biases that may affect judicial decisions?
This is a very sensitive subject that has been studied in the judiciary because implicit bias infects us all. And it's being sensitive to that knowledge that we know that it exists so that if something should arise, it feels you get that sort of odd sense that something is happening in the courtroom to take a second to evaluate what happens next. I had an experience with someone that was in the courtroom that was super aggressive, and it turned out that he was the victim. And that very much, it caused me to respond to him in a way that wasn't appropriate, and I knew that. And so I took a breath and began to listen more just to his statements as opposed to how he was being very physically aggressive in the courtroom. This isn't to say that that's always what's going to happen, but it's a matter of being sensitive to the fact that it could happen at any moment in time, and you never know what party or what instance is going to trigger it. But it's being sensitive to it enough to address it and not react to it.
Mr. Smithson.
Thank you. Sure. I think the first thing you have to do is you have to recognize that it's there, and you have to take it head on and make sure that you are educating yourself on the topic, making sure that you are, as the judge, being fair in all of your rulings, in all of your hearings. Part of that is allowing everybody to have their say. People tend to feel that they got a fair hearing or a fair shake when they've had their opportunity to present their position. At the same time, I think what you need to do is you need to go through your dockets, you need to look at the number of people that you have incarcerated, you have to look at the numbers and the stats, and then yearly, every 2 years, 3 years, look at those stats and decide, are we having a greater impact on one community than another, and take steps to alleviate that. If that means you bring in somebody for more training for your entire staff or for the whole bench, then I think that's what you do.
Judge Ochoa Brooke.
So I've actually spent a lot of time educating myself and also serving in a role as a teacher in this subject matter. And one of the things that is really important to keep in mind is that all of us have biases, and they can come out in so many different ways. And it's so important to be self-aware and to always question yourself if you are being biased towards someone and maybe don't understand why. I'm going to give you a really quick example from tribal court. I was accused of being harsher on women in cases, and it was a very particular subset of cases in which there was it was like the middle of the night, and it involved like drugs and being out, and in the morning they were worried about their children. And I didn't realize that being a mother is the most important role that I hold dear, and that I was doing that. And so I had to take, it made me obviously feel bad, but I now understanding where it came from, then I was able to make sure that when I had litigants before me that I checked myself, I screened it, if this was a man, would I be responding in the same way? And I think that's the education piece is so important because it depends on lived experiences. All of us have different experiences through our families, through experiences that we've had, and those can taint and color the way that we react and respond. And so I think it's important specifically for a judge, to make sure that we're very self-aware and that we do a lot of self-retrospective analysis and work on us and knowing, are we being fair, and if equally situated people, would I react the same way?
Ms. Friedman.
Thank you. I think the question is specifically asking about what steps specifically are something that I would be taking. And so, elephant in the room here, I don't have any judicial experience. So I'm thinking about, through my approximately a decade of trial experience across the state, what things have I seen judges do that I found particularly effective, and what things have I seen that I've thought haven't been as effective when looking at how they've handled implicit bias. And so thinking through those things, there are a couple things that I think are really effective tools in a judge's toolkit when it comes to handling implicit bias. Some are utilized fairly frequently, some are utilized less frequently. I think that a judge not being afraid to call a recess, whether the parties are getting a little out of hand, or whether the judge themselves needs to take a breather. I think that's something that is really effective. And I don't think that it's underutilized necessarily, but I think it's not always the first thing that comes to mind. And I think that it's something that really is an effective and important tool, because it also gives the judge the ability to think, wait a second, I know I'm partway through this case, but should I be recusing? There's nothing that says that a judge can't recuse partway through a case. Now, an attorney can't ask a judge via an affidavit, which is another tool that judges should never be afraid to sign affidavits of prejudice, right? That's another thing. But I think judges should not be afraid to recuse off files if they have even an inkling in their mind. So those are the main steps that I think are, and I see I'm getting the red, so I'll finish the sentence. But I think those are the main things, taking a recess, really thinking, am I getting even an inkling of a thought here, and not being afraid to sign affidavits.
You're listening to a forum featuring candidates for Spokane's Municipal Court. It's sponsored by the NAACP. Time for the next question.
Second question, Gabriella.
My question is, what do you see as the biggest challenges facing municipal courts?
Mr. Smithson, we'll let you go first.
Thank you. I think probably our biggest challenge is funding. We have lost funding progressively over time. City Council has been gracious, but the city, we are a department of the city. The city is losing money, and we're going to have a budget shortfall next year. That may come down to the courts as well. They may ask us to have to make some tough decisions in our department and decide how we're going to handle that. We also work closely with the probation department, and that budget is tied closely to the courts. So we're losing resources. We're going to have to figure out ways to address the shortfalls. We're going to have to find ways either if nonprofits can come in and help us, or if we can figure out another way to give the same level of service that we've been given for the past 18, 20 years. But we're going to have to do it in probably new ways going forward until the economy turns around and tax revenue starts increasing.
Judge Ochoa-Brook.
You're probably going to hear the same theme about resources right now, and I think the court's not alone in the shortfall of revenues and needing to make those prioritizations. Personally, I think an area that I'm really hoping that we can preserve at municipal court is our criminal justice services department, so our probation department, to be able to provide that support and assistance that people need through their probationary. We do have this program called the Risk Needs Assessment, so it's like our people get on enhanced probation is really what it's called, enhanced probation. But this allows someone to have a person that guides them and walks alongside them along the way and making sure they're able to connect to services and that they get the connection and the treatment that they need and that they work closely with them. And that's specifically for our high-risk, high-needs individuals that have a long criminal history and have had a really difficult time really getting on that recovery journey. I think that should be a priority, that we're able to continue supporting people with having the criminal justice counselors to assist them.
Ms. Friedman.
Thank you. I think, obviously, budget is always going to be a concern. It's a concern everywhere in the court system. I think there's been, unfortunately, a misappropriation of some of the resources that we do have. I think too many people are being put on the essentially high needs probation that my opponent was just talking about, people who don't necessarily qualify as someone who needs that probation. I think in addition, too many people have been put on commissioner dockets who don't need to be. There's been an overuse of the commissioners. I think in addition, we're going to be coming up more and more with concerns relating to, and this is not just municipal court, but we're going to be needing more public defenders. The Supreme Court has cut the number of cases that public defenders are allowed to take. The cap has been lowered. And I, as far as I'm aware, the public defender's office hasn't been given an increase to hire more people. And that shortfall is going to have to come from somewhere. And I don't know that at this point in time that situation has been rectified. And so more people are going to have to be getting contract public defenders, and that is generally more expensive overall. So we're going to have more people whose cases are going to be continued, which is going to cut into the amount of time that they're being in the system, which is more court dates, which is more court resources. So a misappropriation of the resources that are currently in place overall.
Judge Logan, you get to finish this round.
Thank you. First of all, the municipal court is actually our own separate branch of a tripartite government. We're not a department of anything. And I think the problem that the municipal court has is really one of image. And that is, unfortunately, there is that thought that somehow we're some lesser department as opposed to an equal branch of government in the city. And as a result of that, how we're looked at is that we're not considered because we're across the river and we're not in City Hall. And so it's difficult for us to get a place at the table. There are overriding concerns that happen that we should be a part of those conversations. And as much as we absolutely are happy to appear and be a component of this tripartite system, we really do get forgotten. An example of this is that the city just issued this beautiful little booklet that talks about two branches of government. Nowhere in it is the court even mentioned, and it's for neighborhood resources. So the point that was brought out earlier about that Doug Norick mentioned was people don't know about judges or the court. When our own system doesn't even include us in that conversation, and nobody ever came around to even talk to us. The municipal court is an absolutely essential third branch. We have the opportunity to serve people in a way that brings them justice, that uses the resources that we do have in an efficient and effective way to help get them out of the system. But if we are disregarded in that process, it's very difficult for us to always do more with less.
You're listening to Inland Journal from SBR News, and we're listening to candidates for two Spokane municipal court seats at a recent forum sponsored by the Spokane chapter of the NAACP.
Question number three, Nikita. We'll start with Judge Ochoa Brook.
Okay. My question is, how do you plan to engage with the community and ensure equal access to justice for everyone?
I appreciate that question. I've been working in criminal justice for 25 years. I moved to Spokane in 2016, and I have made it an intentional part of not only my professional life, but personal life on getting involved in the community. I worked for 6 years for the city as a director of multicultural affairs under the Condon administration. I had an opportunity to meet a lot of people in the community. I do belong to different boards. I belong to the Empower Health Foundation board, which through that work, I get to meet a lot of people, learn about issues and things like that can inform the work that I do with the court. I also I'm on the board of the Providence Mission Board, and I believe public health and criminal justice are interconnected. We deal with a lot of dealing with mental health and substance use disorder are public health issues. So I want to make sure that I'm informed and that I'm involved in those discussions. I volunteer. Some of you in this room have known that I volunteer a lot to serve on panels and to share information that I have. I'm also really proud that I've just got on the board of Partners with Families and Children. It's an organization that works with children that have been through negligence, and there's working with the parents, are trying to keep the parents together. I have also had an opportunity to work for the Spokane and the Kalispell Tribal Courts as a tribal court judge, and in this region, our Native community is the most disproportionately impacted community, with the Black community being next. I'm being disproportionately represented in the criminal justice system. And so I have spent a lot of time doing work in these areas, and it's work that I'm going to continue to do.
Ms. Friedman.
I think I'm going to answer it backwards. Engaging with the community and ensuring equal access to justice for all. In terms of engaging with the community, I'm not on any boards. I'm a small business owner, and I also, as I said, have contracts working with low bono, a low bono part of my practice. And I also do pro bono work, ensuring that protection orders can happen when I can for individuals who need access in the civil protection realm and don't necessarily qualify for YWA services. YMCA services, sorry. And so in terms of being on boards, I'm not. But, you know, I do have a rather unique perspective to bring to the bench in terms of access for justice for all, in that I don't think we have any openly neurodivergent judges right now. I have severe ADHD, and unfortunately, I've had to become rather public about that in the last 2 years. And along with that comes sort of a hypervigilance when it comes to inflated sense of justice. And so I don't know why, if that's why I've had a higher number of a disproportionate number of queer clients, trans clients, clients who are neurodivergent. I'm tied into a lot of these communities, but I do. I see the red.
You got the red, so we'll
have to finish. Yes, I am finishing up the sentence. So in terms of ensuring access to justice, I'm hyper aware of a lot of issues because my brain is wired that way.
Judge Logan.
So for the past 16 years, I have been very involved in the state system of judges. I have been on the diversity committee. I am on the diversity, not currently, but I have been on the diversity committee, and I'm on the therapeutic court committee. And that is to make sure that we educate ourselves on opening the doors to our courtrooms to all who want to enter, and to have it not be a re-traumatizing experience each and every time that they come in. We don't actually choose who is sent to our courtrooms. People are arrested out on the street. That's not the judge's job to have that enforcement capacity. But our job is when they come in there, is that we treat them with fairness, that we listen to what they have to say, that we measure that against what they're charged with. And those are all components that create procedural fairness, because what we've learned, what I have learned, is that if you give someone the opportunity, if you give them their voice in the courtroom, that they are much more receptive to whatever sentence it is or whatever determination that you make on their case, because you've given them an opportunity to be heard. We know that there has been a study done of those persons incarcerated, and there is an extraordinarily high percentage of persons of color that are arrested. But in that same study that was taken, and this was a MacArthur grant that came through, what happened for the individuals that came through in our courtrooms was they were treated with fairness. That while there was disproportionality in terms of the arrest, what happened when they came into our courtroom was that disproportionality did not continue. So that means that we were being sensitive to that fact, that we were aware of neutralizing the person that was before us.
Mr. Smithson.
So one thing, as alluding to what Judge Logan was speaking to, municipal court is overwhelmingly a criminal court. We have very few civil cases, and those civil cases are actually civil infractions. We don't necessarily have accident cases or personal injury cases or even felonies. So when we think about it in terms of municipal court, as Judge Logan stated, we're kind of spoon-fed the people that come before the court, but I think it is important that they have their say, they have their hearing, they are invested in the outcome. Oftentimes we put people on probation, they might have to do treatment, they might have to do evaluations to see what sort of treatment they need, and so it's important to get buy-in from them and so that they're successful in probation. Our probation department does a good job of that. They work with them and make sure that people are invested. But the courts have done a good job in the prosecutor's office. We have analyzed this situation. I know that the courts worked on this. They changed the times of dockets so that people didn't have to worry about, well, gosh, I'm going to lose my job if I go to court at 9 o'clock in the morning. I've got to drop the kids off and get to work. So we can be flexible and have them come in at 3:15 or 4 o'clock, whatever that looks like. There's also been talk about night court. That didn't get very far, and I don't know that we'll ever get into those discussions again, but we've had those discussions in the past, and I've supported those in the past. I think those are good to have. I'm on the board of the Spokane Regional Domestic Violence Coalition, so I work with and I hear from victims of domestic violence all the time and hear the challenges of going to court and, you know, being intimidated and not wanting to go to court. So I'm aware of those situations, and I work through those with the coalition as well.
The candidates for two Spokane City Judicial seats are Mary Logan, Lyndon Smithson, Gloria Ochoa-Brook, and Sarah Friedman. They're speaking at a forum sponsored by the NAACP and held at Spokane Community College. Time for the next question.
Do you support programs such as therapeutic court, drug court, or mental health court? Is your focus on rehabilitation versus punishment?
Absolutely. And one of the main pillars of my platform is actually to expand those courts, not just supporting those courts, but expanding those courts. In all of the work that I've done, and my undergrad degree is in criminology and criminal justice, so I know a little bit of what I'm talking about here, I would hope. Everything that I've ever seen, ever read, ever experienced, ever heard my clients talk about, ever seen my clients successfully recover from addiction through mental health challenges that people I've known have overcome. Everything shows that locking people away and throwing away the key is expensive and a waste of time. This does not work. Expanding our programs, specifically what I would really like to see is expanding them through providing the option of EMDR therapy and ideally getting grants so that we have more practitioners of EMDR who have backgrounds that more align with the populations that we are serving in these courts. People of color, vets, people who have been through DV traumas, who are practitioners of EMDR. This is what I want us to be able to provide through our therapeutic courts. Because EMDR works quickly, and it doesn't have to be used in a vacuum. And so I think that us being able to provide a trauma-based therapy approach, since all of our mental health courts, I'm sorry, all of our therapeutic courts have trauma at their core, it's going to make the ability for the treatment, other treatments, more effective.
Judge Logan, you're next.
I have based my career on having therapeutic approaches, not just actual traditional therapy courts, but when I started this court along with Judge Zamlin and Judge Staub back in 2009, when this court stood up, it was with the very principles of re-examining what would be best practices, the best approaches to take in trying to, again, help our participants in court, the defendants in court, get out of the system entirely. We took about the first 3 years in order to do a deep dive study using the best practices from the National Center for State Courts, at the time from the National Association of Drug Court Professionals, now known as ALRISE, and from the Center for Justice Innovation. It used to be known as the Center for Court Innovation, because there are multiple approaches that can be taken, also Justice for Vets, multiple approaches that can be taken depending on the population that you're trying to serve. The very first court that I assisted in standing up was a Veterans Enhanced Treatment Court. So serving those criminal legal involved veterans that come into our court that have really lost their way. They have a sense of pride and what they feel is a sense of shame because they're in the criminal legal system. But they come, these highly skilled individuals come with a rucksack filled with trauma and repressed problems. But throughout the entirety of the municipal court, we have a spectrum of approaches, including our enhanced probation, which is not a therapeutic court, but is a therapeutic approach. I also stood up the community court, which is for those people that are unhoused and probably the most chaotic and the most difficult because housing is at such a shortage. We absolutely wrap treatment around them. They absolutely are held accountable to engaging in that treatment and going through testing, but where they end up is under the bridge because there's no housing that's made available for them.
Mr. Smithson.
So initially, and I know that the courts are a mystery to a lot of people, municipal court is a restorative we're trying to get people back out of the system, we're trying to get them whole or make them better. Superior Court is a punitive model, so you do the crime, you just do jail time. We're not necessarily trying to rehabilitate people, but municipal court is a real rehabilitative court by design. So at the outset, that's our goal with every single person that comes to the court. I am 100% on board with therapeutic courts. I was our mental health prosecutor for about 3 years when I was in the prosecutor's office as chief assistant city prosecutor. We had a recidivism rate of about 20%, which meant within 2 years, only 20% of our people were being arrested. In general court, municipal court, I've been told by the court administrator that the recidivism rate is 80%. So 80% of the people in the regular court are going to be arrested within, I believe it was 2 years is the benchmark that they were setting. It is, therapeutic courts are wonderful. They get people established, they get people back into a situation where they can go through treatment and they can go through treatment and be successful. In mental health court, there was a woman that had schizophrenia. She had severe mental health issues. She was using methamphetamine to keep the voices from telling her not to go to treatment. And once we got her onto her prescribed medications, she stopped using, she started doing treatment, she established herself in housing, and she graduated in 24 months, and she was a model of what can happen. But it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of compassion, and it takes the judge to understand that we need to be leading people somewhere, and we can't just let them spiral and be on a hamster wheel, if you will.
Judge Ochoa Brooke.
So I am a very strong supporter of therapeutic courts, drug courts, mental health courts, courts that are focused on rehabilitation and restorative justice. I've had the opportunity to be a deputy prosecutor. I've also did state and federal criminal defense work, and I spent 6 years doing criminal justice reform initiatives in Spokane when the Blueprint for Reform came out. It was a city-county partnership on trying to reduce recidivism in the system. I realized I had a knowledge gap, and so I went back to WSU in 2016 and did my master's in criminal justice and criminology because I wanted to make sure that the work that I did was informed by evidence-based and actual research that shows what does work in the criminal justice system. The courts that are the most effective are those that follow best practices and evidence-based approaches, and part of that is the component of, again, the whole balanced approach of giving people opportunity, support, wrapping around them, but at the same time, the accountability piece has to be there. Our DUI court is run on a traditional drug court type of model, and our recidivism rate, I believe Judge O'Sullivan said they just done a recent assessment, was like at 6%. So that shows that it's a very effective court. I strongly believe that a work that does need to be done is to create more access for people to be able to access those programs. Unfortunately, because of funding, there's always limits to how many people can participate. The need is greater than the capacity of our courts to be able to handle that, which is one of the reasons I take my approach with the people that, you know, aren't in a therapeutic court. I have the regular regular dockets, and I really do take every single case where I look at the individual, their history, and okay, what can we do to this time that you're here? I'm a big believer in diversion. If you can divert people to mental health and substance use disorder on their own, that's great. But while they're here, what can we do to break this cycle? What can we do different that hasn't been done before?
This is a forum for Spokane Municipal Court candidates sponsored by the Spokane chapter of the NAACP. Time for the next question.
Question number 5, Gabriella.
Thank you. Spokane County recently held an Assistance Day event in municipal court to help people with expired legal financial obligations or LFOs. What can municipal court do to support these types of programs?
Judge Logan, I'm sorry.
Well, first of all, the legal financial obligations for a municipal court are fairly low. We participate in a number of these alternative approaches. We've certainly participated in Warrant Fest, where individuals that are out of the system, they have warrants. And we only can really address the problem if we can get them back into the system. So it is an opportunity for them to get them back into the system by having them at non-threatening sites, like we've been out at a church out in the valley because it was a part of the Homeless Connect. So we were just one tiny component of it, but we have participated in that every single year that I believe since they started. Certainly within the last 10 years, we've been there every time. I started with illegal financials because actually our court very seriously takes our Supreme Court's edicts. It started with a case that's called Blazina. And in that instance, the Supreme Court in its final decision was, it was telling us as the courts of limited jurisdiction to truly take into account the individual that is before you to determine whether or not they're even financially able to pay a fine. Because to add sort of a collateral consequence that would not otherwise maybe have been made aware of is their inability to pay. So we first of all take that very close look before any fees or fines are levied against someone. But there are opportunities at these legal financial clinics, legal financial obligation clinics, to then take a second look if needed to reduce so that it is not something that and it disables them from having a more productive life.
Mr. Smithson.
Thank you. Echoing kind of what Judge Logan said, there's case law, also the legislature has addressed this, so we're not running a debtor's prison, we're not trying to put people in jail so that they have to pay off their debts. Municipal court is great about waiving fines if that's what needs to happen. If somebody comes back a couple years later and they're like, gosh, I'm still paying on my fines, I haven't paid them off yet, oftentimes the prosecutor's office will agree to waive the rest of those fees. So municipal court is great about that. They've done a great job of working and minimizing the impact on people. We had a program a while back that we restored people's licenses prior to having to pay off all of their fines. That kind of went away, but that was another innovative thing that Spokane Municipal Court started. I think then we started telling other courts about it, and I think it was in probably 10 or 15 different places across the state. So Spokane Municipal Court has been great about being proactive and making sure that we are not dramatically and negatively impacting people over such things as fines or probation fees, that type of stuff.
Judge Ochoa Brooke.
So the legal financial obligation, that's what an LFO is, for those of you that may not know what the acronym is. That, as Judge Logan indicated, the Supreme Court has came down with the ruling that the courts cannot impose fines upon people that are indigent and unable to pay them. And so that's something that the municipal court has taken very seriously. Another thing that I look at also is that there isn't just the cost of LFOs, that's just one piece of the cost of someone going through the criminal justice system. I am very aware of people that, you know, they have to drop kids off or they work and they can get off early. And so I was a strong supporter of, after COVID, there was this push of going back to everybody comes to court at 9 in the morning, if you have court morning in the court, and everybody comes back at 1:30. And I was a big advocate of keeping the staggered dockets so that we have 9, 9:30, and 10 in the morning, and then we have 1:30, 2, and 2:30 in the afternoon. Because I ask every person what works best for you, morning or afternoon, because that is a cost for childcare, for parking, for loss of wages when they have to not be able to work. If somebody can work a partial day and come to the latest afternoon, that really helps. I'm also aware, having been a private defense attorney myself, that when somebody would retain me on a driving offense, if they had an infraction that was riding along with it, I'd represent them on both. The public defender's office cannot do that. But what I do is I take the initiative. I know the other judges on the bench have been doing that as well, where I take the initiative of checking to see if there's an infraction and then adding it onto the case, and then I track it along the way because it helps make sure that it doesn't get defaulted on accident. So there's a lot of things that we can do as a court to be more, not just focused on the legal financial obligations, but look at the overall ways that we can help people get through the system in an equitable way.
Ms. Friedman.
Thank you. Yeah. I think in the however long my practice has been open, 7.5, 8 years, municipal court has always been really good about making sure that they track the infractions along, regardless of whether I'm representing someone on them or not. I think, you know, things that I've seen in other places in the state, charging people for jail, that doesn't happen. Trying to charge people a public defender cost, that's something that I always see. There's an appeal process, and the judges always encourage
people to be able to go and examine that. If I was here as a defense attorney and not a judicial candidate, perhaps I would be raising whether the question of it's the protection, the potential fines associated with DUI recoupment costs, whether that was potentially constitutional, but I'm not. I'm here as a judicial candidate, and that's not specific to municipal court. And even then, you know, I think that in municipal court, that's generally ordered less often than it is in other jurisdictions. So really, I think this is a fantastic question, but I think it's a lot more applicable in other jurisdictions. I mean, municipal court doesn't do LFO, LFOs in the same way that Superior does and district and even other jurisdictions, other counties, you're a lot more likely to be picking up bits and pieces in ways that Spokane Municipal just doesn't tack on.
You're listening to a forum featuring candidates for Spokane's Municipal Court. It's sponsored by the NAACP.
Our final question, Nikita, and you'll be asking to Mr. Smithson.
Are there any reforms or innovations you would propose to improve the efficiency of the court?
I do have some ideas, especially for community court. So when I was in our mental health court, we had navigators that would help people through the system. They would be put on probation. They could call this person, and the person would help them figure out where they have to go to get an evaluation. They would remind them when their treatment dates are, and they would make sure that they come back to court. I believe that the participants of community court need that help. We need to work with partners somewhere in the community. I don't know where that's going to come from. I'm pretty sure it's not going to come from the city paying for these positions. So we're going to have to be creative. We're going to have to find a way that we can find navigators to help the people through community courts so that they can get into treatment, they can be successful, and frankly, we can save their lives. Because currently, the people that are in community court are swirling through addiction. We have way too many people dying that are on the docket, and we need to take some big steps to change what's going on.
Judge Ochoa Brooke.
I actually love this question because that's one of the reasons that I was so excited about running for municipal court judge. Having worked with the city of Spokane from 2013 to 2019, I had the opportunity to see so many successful public-private partnerships that occur when there's already organizations doing really good work in the community, and then you can partner with some of the infrastructure that government has. One of the things that there's a lot of opportunity for, and unfortunately this hasn't worked out operationally this term, but I do have a pilot program, for example, right now that's in with the VOA, the Crosswalk. They have this program called InReach that works with youth 18 to 25, and they get assigned a case manager, and it's very wraparound services. It's a partnership also with CHAZ, and they also have a partnership with the Spokane Community College for those students that are, or that youth group, that group of youth that are interested in getting vocational training or training, and also connecting them to treatment. So they're already doing that work in the community as well. And so when I see a young person that falls within that age group, and I ask about family structure, and I find out they're either homeless or they're in a stable situation, being able to create formal partnerships. Right now it's not a formal partnership, but being able to form formal partnerships with those organizations already doing that work with those specific demographics that come through our criminal justice system to really assist making sure that they're successful. I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. I think there might be a forced opportunity because of all the funding that everybody is facing here moving forward, that we could do more collaboration with the courts on how to connect people to services with those that are already doing really good work, and us being the people that are under our supervision, that we're able to kind of going back to that accountability piece.
Ms. Friedman.
Thank you. You know, I think, and I've talked to a district court judge about this, and I've talked to a superior court judge about this, And both of them got the, this is so simple, I can't believe we're not doing this. I think that when it comes to municipal court criminal protection orders, we should be asking two questions when a victim in a case is coming in asking for those orders to be dropped. And the thing you have to understand is in a criminal protection order, people are not, victims are not the ones who get those put in place. There are two parties to those orders, right? The parties are, in municipal court, the city of Spokane and the defendant. So the victim is not a party to those. The victim, in most cases, did not ask for those orders to be put in place. And so when they're coming in asking for those orders to be terminated or modified in some way, the judge doesn't have to do it just because they're asking for it. We should be asking two questions. We should be asking, one, do you have a safety plan? Obviously not asking what it is, but do you have one? And two, do you know how to get a civil protection order if you change your mind? And then we should be giving every single person a sheet of paper with where to go to get a civil protection order and when the hours of operation are open. And then we should be leaning towards giving advocacy, honoring and respecting the self-advocacy of DV victims. Because civil protection orders have the same criminal consequences as those criminal orders. And so if someone is coming to the system and saying, I don't want this, I'm not ready for this, I'm not ready to leave, all we're doing by saying no is telling them that the system, I see it, is telling them that the system is not a safe place and won't listen to them when they are ready to leave.
Judge Logan.
The innovations that exist in the municipal court include a buffet, an array of collaborative and cooperative relationships, ones that I and my team put together, particularly with reference to community court. We had an outreach into the community to establish those relationships with service providers, set out an invitation in 2012 to about 166 showed up. From that sprang the service provider room that now exists at the library and is available to anyone. No one has to be criminal legal involved to access things such as getting your ID, which is the gateway to every other service that could possibly be provided, including housing. We have continued to evolve in this process to include even more services and more opportunities to engage with treatment. When the opioid funds were distributed to the county and the city carved off a chunk to consistent care, which is led by Dr. Darren Nevin, a doctor we've been working with since the inception of community court. He provides medically assisted treatment, which is the gold standard. There isn't a better way to go than having medically assisted treatment available to our participants. So every month, every 6 months, as time goes on, there are permutations and add-ons, including that we are now established with a relationship with Pioneer. And not only did we already have navigators as a component of community court, we lost one of them because of budget cuts, but now we have already begun that process with Pioneer, and they will be there to assist. But the other innovation that I would want is to bring back Saturday court.
You've been listening to a forum for the candidates for two Spokane City judicial seats. Judge Mary Logan is running against challenger Lyndon Smithson. Judge Gloria Ochoa Brook is challenged by Sarah Friedman. They were speaking at a forum sponsored by the NAACP. It was held at Spokane Community College. You can hear the full forum online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Inland Journal is the weekly public affairs program produced by SPR News. The program airs Thursdays at 12:30 p.m., Saturdays at 2:30, or online anytime at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thank you for listening. I'm Doug Nadvornik.